The signs are out. Roy Merriweather's back, and people are making the trek across the river from West Lafayette to Lafayette nightly to catch him at Arnie's. And Roy Merriweather has done us the honor of reversing the trek to make over here to West Lafayette to talk a while with Persis Newman and myself. And welcome back.
Thank you. Is that the only time they cross the river coming from west to east is when I come to town?
Yeah, it is the only time, and it's more the occasion because you notice the water parted when you came this way. Made a big difference. We know it's special.
It's a pleasure to be here once again, really. I was looking forward to seeing you.
And I know our listeners are enjoying looking at you right now, so we'll probably proceed ahead with some of those really deep questions we always talk about every time you visit.
Yeah, every time I come here, I have to do push-ups in the morning, you know, to make sure that I got it all together, because you really come up with some good ones.
Well, I'm glad you think so, because Persis Newman is about to hit you with one of the heaviest things of the day so far.
Well, actually, it's the Bible that I'm going to hit you with, because I've noticed
I've been good.
Have you? Oh, well, then I can just lay it down quietly.
Okay.
Two or three times that I've been out to hear you this past week and a half, I hear more and more reference to some biblical learnings and expressions that you're using with your music, mm-hmm. titles like Seven Trumpets. And I think folks might like to know something about the origin of your works right now, the new things you're writing, and tell us how much the Bible fits in, if you can, to your new work.
Well, the Bible fits in because I was raised on the Bible. My father's a minister, and matter of fact, he just retired this year, and he'd been preaching. He's 80 years old, been preaching 56 years or so. And he retired from pastoring, not preaching, of course. Pastoring is the job and preaching is the pleasure, you know. And I've been, most of the things I've written on, like Cain, that I started back a couple years ago, and it's very difficult to write on the Bible because I want to write the Bible like I've written Black Snow, an action, not to get a couple of gospel numbers together and call it Revelations. I want to write what's going on. You know, so you got to get inside of it. And I've had to do a lot of reading besides being taught from my childhood, which what stemmed me to start writing from the Bible to begin with. When I hear my father when I was a kid talk about Revelations and the things that John the Revelator saw, and with my imagination, I guess being a musician, I used to imagine those things in my mind. And I used to wonder what it would be like to write songs, which everyone writes from their roots, from what they were raised up. You know, I think Chick Corea from the Spanish element and so forth. And so I've been wanting to do this for years. And so I don't call myself being on a very heavy religious kick, which I am not putting down. It's just that I'm excited about the most exciting stories ever written, which is the best book ever written. So did I answer it?
You did. And the excitement's coming out in I, John, Saw, which is the title of one of the tunes that I've heard you do.
Yeah, I've done that since I've been here. You should have heard that with the Philharmonic. That was really a sleeper. It was really nice. I was very proud of myself. Yeah. And a song that I like a lot that I'm anxious to hear that you haven't heard is The Vision. And the vision is about Ezekiel seeing the wheel in the middle of a wheel. And it leads up nice and slowly to this vision. And then there's a part in this song that says, that's the vision that I'm talking about. Then it starts back around again, like building going uphill to this point, and then this vision starts again. And it's a nice song. I kind of like it. And I played it last night for the first time because I have a new bassist. Am I giving you a chance to talk?
We asked you to tell us all about that. So,
yeah.
We're going to ask you, who is with your group now?
I still have Rick Spees. He refused to leave. And no, I'm very fortunate to still have Rick Spees, who's very talented. And Dave Carpenter from Dayton, Ohio. First bassist I've had from Dayton, Ohio in 10 years or so, who's very talented also. I'm back into the upright acoustic bass along with the electric bass, and he's very capable on each one of them. And I didn't know how much I'd missed it, because I've had some very good electric players, Chuck Jacobs, who was with Kenny Rogers, and Ronnie Scott with me, and they were very, very good. But I still enjoy very much the ballads on acoustic bass. You know? And so I'm very happy to have this group. I'm looking forward to a lot of musical fun.
Dynamics of change are interesting. We've seen a number come through with you and agree, boy, they were fine. Yeah. Ever come to a point, or have you ever known your sidemen to come to a point where they got so good they were too comfortable and the spark was gone?
I've had to come to a point where they thought they were that good and they stopped listening and then found out that they weren't when they went out somewhere else. I would look forward to a point where it could get comfortable enough so that you could think about other things besides getting comfortable. You know, because once you get comfortable, then you can think about things like 7 trumpets and 8 trumpets, writing other songs. Uh-huh. You spend your time trying to get comfortable. Sometimes you spend your whole career trying to get comfortable. Of course, you have to write under adversity most of the time. I heard that Gershwin did, you know.
Yeah, his cigar was always burning his lips. It was always so short when he was...
Yeah, he had quite a bit of turmoil in his system because of the anxiety he suffered trying to relax and for various reasons. But I've never had it be so comfortable that it become complacent. I've only had people, and not to be derogatory and not mention any names either, but I've had people that thought that they knew and had admitted a year later after they left that they didn't. No.
Some industries try to keep their executives on their toes all the time. They may have a program where an up-and-coming guy can always challenge somebody else for their job and try it out or something like that to keep them going.
What do you mean, like audition somebody else?
Yeah, something like that. And I'm just thinking, you've been going along here, and what I'm hearing you saying is you've never come to the point yet yourself where you got into something where you're only striving to be comfortable. But to be comfortable with what you're playing, see if this is not right, be comfortable with what you're playing is merely the gateway so you can really start to branch out and challenge yourself.
Right. To be comfortable to begin doing other things. I feel being comfortable is giving the freedom to expand. Now I can launch myself off this path, not to sit down and say, well, I think I'll retire. You know, I've done it all. Maybe I should never be comfortable, because I play better when I'm uncomfortable, because I have to fight harder to get the things across. And sometimes when you get too comfortable, you might not, because we're talking about two different ways to feel that way, you know. You have to watch it, I guess, how you're going to feel. Because maybe you shouldn't get comfortable, because you might get complacent, you know. And I'm saying to you that I would like to get comfortable in order to move, you know. But maybe I don't know what I'm saying to you. You have to wait and see, you know.
Life has cycles like that, doesn't it, really? You go through a certain time and you really get almost good at whatever you've been brought into, whether it be just a certain style or a certain routine, a certain schedule, and just about the time you think, wow, I could just go for 60 years on this, something big happens and it all changes again.
Yeah. You ever been to a point that things are in adverse conditions for so long that when everything's all right, you think something's wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of comfortableness.
You're looking behind trees.
Yeah. But things are not supposed to be comfortable and really relaxed and just happy, you know. It's always got to be a soap opera.
Yeah. But after those times, what does that do for you, having come through that?
Oh, yeah, you look around and realize that you've grown quite a bit. You get to the point, the older you get, that you'll say, I wonder when the light in the tunnel's going to come. You know, I get to the point now at my age that I look for the light in the tunnel. I know that nothing lasts forever. Thank God bad things don't either. So you look for this light in the tunnel. I just very vaguely see it. You know, I'm too far in the middle of it. Maybe a friend of mine, like the two of you, could see it easier than I can, because other people can see you better than you can see yourself. But it's funny how you know that I'll be glad when this period passes, or that period. To the audience, I'm saying that things are not terrible, you know. Everything's all right. We're just talking about the experiences of musicians. I wanted to speak a little bit more on the Bible. My plan is to continue to write. I've chosen the Bible to write from. I cannot say at point in time which dates that I will have certain things because I go as I am able to go, and I live. I make a living doing what I'm doing, you know. But I was fortunate enough to have 3 or 4 weeks in New York, which were first time I had a good vacation. And once I got all my booking business straightened out and find out where I was able to sit down and knowing that my business was in order. And I just started to run in the park, Central Park, in the mornings and come back, and I'll walk in the park. Walking the Central Park was fascinating for me, and come back and read an hour of the Bible. And you have to watch it when you're reading the Bible because, well, strange things happen to you. You find yourself quoting from the Bible, which is, I'm saying it like it might be, it's not bad to quote from the Bible. It's just that you find yourself quoting from the Bible.
Verily.
And you say, what am I doing? You know, people look at you that have been knowing you, and you'll say, well, it is relative to what I'm talking about. I hope my conversation is making sense. You know.
Well, what you're saying is what comes out is the input.
Yeah.
If you read Hustler all the time, you'd sound like Hustler Man. Which is better? Of course, yeah. Hustler is a Christian publication.
Oh, that's right. It is. Oh, boy. No comment. And then you tell yourself when you're reading, it's a little scary. I'm not afraid to write from Revelations. My sister Betty, who had sang with me years ago, she said I was scaring her because I would call her up long distance in Atlanta. By the way, my sister who is sang with me is living in Atlanta, Georgia. She's studying to be an evangelist. Yeah. And she's my word writer. And man, can she write words. And what I'm writing is right down her alley, you know. So I'll call her up and I'll hum on the phone and be beating the receiver with time. And I said, now this is in six. Six is a four. It's like four, ladies and gentlemen, except you just count six beats instead of four, you know. And the accent's on six. And I'll beat it on the phone. And she'll be laughing at the other end of the phone and we'll be exchanging words for the songs, you know. And I wrote a song that I'm trying to finish before I leave here. I'm trying to, called 144. 144,000. And it's kind of a maiden voyage-ish type gospel rock. It's mellow type. You know, and I hope to finish it before I leave. Dave is learning things so fast that of course you still have to let him, you know, it'll be 6 months before he gets real comfortable, but he's a very fast learner. And so I'm over anxious. So,
so you're writing it and then also working on it as a group.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to go over that with a lot of stuff. Well, I've started another song about Joshua. Somebody asked me how I know these songs are what they are. The only example I can give is that I was reading the beginning of Revelations when I first started to write out of Revelations. And I kept reading, and I, John, saw each chapter, once it got started good, say, and I, John, saw. So the next morning, this melody came, which was I, John, saw, the one that you've heard. And I played it, and I said, why am I writing a blues about Revelations? You know, why shouldn't I write a blues about Revelations? But I couldn't figure that out, so I went to the Bible, and I read it, and then I started to figure out, always have a certain amount of words that are my subject to see if the subject fits, like I, John, saw, like that. And then I go and play the song around, the pattern around. If it comes around and the puzzle fits, I, John, saw, I said, that's what it is. Yeah. And the same thing happens with Seven Trumpets. I first got the idea in Florida, and I kept playing this phrase, you know, and it kept reminding me of biblical sense. And these are more story songs. They're not gospel numbers. They are message story songs. You know, if a person heard them, if I didn't say a word, they wouldn't know what they were. Except some people say they shake when they hear them, you know. But anyway, with seven trumpets, I just read, and the feeling just told me that's what it was.
Something about the power of music. We're getting into this summer, too. It's interesting. We're miles apart, but sort of traveling same directions. Something about the power in music. You can take an ordinary song, I'm throwing this out for your comment, and play it. And somebody might smile and say, very nicely done. You can take another one, and it seems like every note is not just listened to, but it carries something that does something within people. It's actually loaded. It imparts something. Sounds to me, I'd like your comment on this, sounds to me like you're moving more and more into an area where everything you play from now on is going to be loaded. It sounds like you're leaving show business and getting into the impartation business of change.
Would you explain what you mean by mm-hmm. loaded? Mm-hmm. Leaving show business and getting to...
Loaded with the power to affect people, instead of just playing nice songs. You always played well and were pleasing, but it sounds like you're getting out of... You're not leaving pleasing people, but you're really interested in bringing change, working change through your music. And it sounds like more and more that's taking over your whole repertoire.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm afraid to comment on that. I don't doubt it. It's very hard to comment on that without blowing my own horn, you know, or whatever. But I've always, to answer it this way, I've always been into message songs. I think that being a pianist and not sing, you have to material in order to separate yourself from a performer are a carrier of something to people. You have your material should be, for the most part, have a message, like Taking It to the Streets. I like that song because of what it says, what it means, you know. So I enjoy playing it because it's really strong, you know. It comes across. And I have a very hard time being background music, I guess because I want to speak, you know. So maybe I am going a direction that you say. I'm sure I am, probably, you know. But I like to see what happens, you know. I just let it go at its own pace and slowly.
Well, you keep on reading that book of Revelation. You may end up being out there. People will be seeing visions and all sorts of stuff. When you, oh, this sounds a little far out. But.
Yeah, you know, I turn to Psalms for intermission.
Yeah.
This is brought to you by Psalms, and I read a lot of peaceful things in Psalms.
But know. I'm interested in the fact that you can pick up creativity and your writing the minute you get your affairs in order in New York and are running in the park and doing a little reading. You see, if you weren't really filling up with some message to impart, then you'd just go back home and sleep in. But as it is, you sound as though you're doing some creative writing during this vacation you had, and that this was a period of filling up and expression that you were ready for and made good use of.
Yeah, I did a lot of finishing. I couldn't, like, in the spring, I had gotten some things. I pretty much wrote Mercurial Messenger in the spring and modified it and polished it off in the summer. Some of the other things, I got snatches. Like, I have a snatch now of a melody that I like a lot, and major to minor type thing. And I'd have to get where I can sit down. I've been trying to find a piano around here where I could spend 3-4 hours alone in privacy so I could just sort of fumble around and see what they are. So I had a chance to finish. And when you're getting into writing, you know, like you want to rush into it, and you cannot get into it unless you get all that other stuff off your mind or in its place. Settled when you're not going to do something, or you know, or when you are going to do something, so that you'll know that that is where it is, so you can say okay, and then you got to start concentrating on trying to get your mind programmed, corralled, so that you can start. And it seems like it's impossible to happen. You know, you don't sit down and say, "Oh boy, I'm gonna here it is." You know, come on, writing, here it comes. You know, it's, you have to really keep working at it, and the first results are terrible. The first day's recordings on your cassette tape are just really terrible. And then it gets a little bit more. It's really discouraging, you know. But finally, when you get going, then you have to leave and go back on the road. as soon as you get all wound up and they're coming off like the news, and the news is typed up on those little machines, it gets going like that a little bit, and you don't want to stop then. And you got to get on the road, and you still try to keep it, and you try to keep it in your mind on the road as you're driving. Put your tape machine on your car, and you're driving along, and you're humming. And a month later, and you've been playing six nights a week for a month, and there you are. Here I am talking to Roger and Persis without a piano to practice. I'm just saying that the writing is really funny. It takes a long time to get into it. Going back into yourself, you know, to get your mind onto, you have to let you tell your mind, like, you know, I'm thinking of an angel blowing a trumpet and the water turning to blood, you know, or something like that. So how am I going to tell people this without scaring them to death? You know, I want to tell them without scaring them to death. But it's funny how you get in and out of writing, and I hope I'm making sense on this.
Yes, because what you're really doing is writing.
I feel like I'm babbling sometimes.
You're writing while you're resting, and any chances you get to rest on the road, you're still writing. It's working, and you're getting some things done, having triggered it.
I would encourage young people to things are a lot better now. Speaking of writing, what you were saying, to really get their writing, pencil writing, together. Because you miss so much when you have to either hum on a tape recorder or have a tape recorder with you at all times. Or when you're in bed and you're in an apartment that you cannot play because of the cold, says after 11 p.m. or something like that, and you need to put this great melody in. I can't tell you how many melodies that have passed me in the night that I tried to hum all night or tried to anything. And if I could have put it down, jotted it down, it would have been great.
So you're saying somebody young starting out in music along with their instrument could do very well to start taking manuscript writing at the same time?
Yeah, if they're ear taught, as long as they can find the right teacher, that it doesn't bother their flow, because sometimes ear training and music training doesn't flow too well unless you have the right teacher. Mm-hmm. Because if a teacher tries to turn you totally around, like a teacher in 71 who was a great teacher, she tried to turn me around and make me start all over again. You know, I'm recording for Columbia Records, and you're going to turn me around. I'm in between your method and mine. I'm fumbling on stage. Say, you know, the best thing you do for me is just to sort of put it on a platter and let me pick out the pieces that I want to eat, or the hors d'oeuvres, and leave the rest there, you know, and feed my brain what it needs in order to just find a way, you know. Make sense?
Yes.
And I had to quit because I was getting to a point that it was more stifling than it was rewarding.
Yes, the person would be teaching you that particular person's method, and it didn't fit your method at all. It just was, you're trying to put on a tight shoe or something.
Yeah, taking Roger into a barbershop and giving him an afro haircut.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Everybody know you're bald.
That's right.
I know, but I guess that's a pretty good analogy. Giving you an afro haircut, and I have the afro, you know. Mm-hmm. If they can find the right teacher that is advanced enough to understand to let them go, have had not only classical, which is important, but street training in music.
Street training.
Yeah, I have been out and played with people, played with non-readers, played with ear players, and played with readers, reader players, and things like that, and would know when they see this person, when they hear them play, would recognize where they're coming from, what type of talent they're working with, and then to let them, and then just show them the importance of learning how to write so they can wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, oh, I got a melody, and write it down and then go back to sleep.
That's fascinating.
I've missed a lot.
Yeah.
So not to say it won't come back, but I've missed a lot of melodies. I know that much, you know.
Yeah. I was reminded of an experience when you said street training. It sparked a whole different direction in thinking, because spent part of the summer in Iowa, and there's a neat club out there where I had the pleasure of sitting in with some good musicians. They have these sessions where you can go and sit in. That's not terribly unusual, but around here it has been for a long time.
Correct.
It's called The Loft in Iowa City.
Oh, in Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's got some great college young musicians.
Yeah, Iowa's very popular for having, you know, good musicians.
I was wondering, now, you've been around the country quite a bit the last few months. Is that typical? They're even starting around this area now of talking about jam sessions again. Is that happening?
It's all a part of the second coming of jazz.
All right.
I think it's all a part of that. And I think that, yes, I know it's in Kansas City there's a lot of that. The Crown Center Hotel does a lot, has a lot of musical events. They have a pianist, a classical pianist in the lobby, and Nat King Cole-ish type, not to say he sounds like him, but he's fantastic. And at the top, who does All the Things You Are, and just really choice material of standards. And then they had me in the signboard room, you know, beating my brains out, you know, on Nubian Lady, you know,
right.
or something, you know.
Yeah.
And then they have the New York Jazz Quartet with Roland Hanna and Sam Jones out across the street for half a week playing outdoors.
Yeah.
And then they have in a ballroom, they have Thank Goodness It's Jazz. You know, they have all this going on, this one complex, hotel complex. And then they're having jam sessions all around. And it's a lot of that happening.
It's like a resurgence in athletics where a few years later you've got a bunch of superstars. Maybe we've got some fine young musicians going to be making themselves heard pretty soon.
Yeah. I think in jazz and legit rock, I think rock is very definitely taking its place. I think disco made people appreciate rock a lot. But, I mean, rock, you know, like Miles Davis was playing rock in his later years of his last career. You know, he's starting a new one, but and which is good music. Anything played well is good,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, I think it's really coming around. It's just happening all over.
The jamming school is open again.
Yeah, that's happening. I hope that it can keep a hat on this time. Sometimes it gets a little carried away, and not everybody gets a chance to participate. And it gets disinterested to people, and they start to shy away.
You mean it gets too specialized, only certain ones? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as long as the jam sessions are organized well enough so that everyone gets a chance to participate that's able to. You know, it's supposed to be a learning experience.
Then
a jam
who
session
are the
is.
Listeners? Who are listening to this?
Yeah.
To these sessions that are happening in, like, that you're hearing about in Iowa, and who's listening here in Lafayette? I've always wanted to be the listener at jam sessions. And I'm knocking on a lot of silent doors around town. I do not know where this is happening. So if a person wanted to just go and hear such sessions, they seem to be not available for anyone but musicians. Is that what you're saying? These jam sessions are just for the players, not for the listeners?
Well, there has been problems once in a while because they'd say, well, because I'm in the union, I shouldn't play a jam session because that's not getting paid for the job and this sort of thing. But I think there may be a relaxation of that just a little bit without getting into technicalities of rules and stuff like that. That's why I wanted to ask Roy a little bit about that, you know, because it sounds very promising as far as being able to have dialogues with people musically.
It's one of the reasons that Charlie Parker became as good as he was. He was, or is, too, you know, as people say, Bird lives, because jam sessions were going on 24 hours a day in Kansas City back in the 30s. And, you know, you could get up and go out and find a jam session any time, day or night. Can you imagine getting up any time, day or night, and what you want to feed you is right there any time you want it, 24 hours a day?
You know, there's one element about that, ego. If, again, I throw this out for your comment, what if there could be jam sessions where people are not out to show off, where somebody is not out to play King of the Mountain with all the others, but they're really there to talk with each other and feed one another and actually make music together? Is this an impossible dream or is it really happening?
Well, it's both of them are happening. People are doing that, and it just depends on what jam session you happen to fall in on. If you fall in on the wrong one, you know, that's just the wrong one.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if it was more like that. I think jam sessions are fun. I walked into a jam session one time, and one of the people there was Eddie Harris. The great Eddie Harris, and he was sitting there, waiting to play again. And it was his gig. And I was there for an hour and 15 minutes. I didn't get to hear Eddie Harris. The rhythm section stopped playing. And they had at least stopped playing for 20 minutes, and just a man was playing. He was fantastic. But I wanted to hear somebody else play.
Yeah.
In an hour and 15 minutes?
Yeah. Right, it should be like a beach ball, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should be back and forth, you know. People like to see that happening. And I, you know, being raised up in the early 60s, I just didn't, at the tail end of all that sort of jam sessions, I never was interested because I didn't want to hear one person play. Mm-hmm. Let's go to a jam session. The first thing I thought of was one person was going to play 80 courses.
Yeah.
I don't even care to hear one person play when it's their group. On an organized concert.
That'd be like going to a play, wouldn't it? You got eight characters on stage, but only one speaks the whole play.
Mm-hmm. One actor, yeah. I think it's, you know, a combination. I think, you know, your side men are comparable, and you have them up there because you have interplay between them and cause for a lot of creativity and back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is 1980, you know. The drummer don't just keep a beat anymore. The bass leads the song anymore. Bass will play a whole tune, you know. And they have him back there, you know, anyway, you know, that's my way of thinking.
That's encouraging that there are these sessions forming nationwide for people, jam sessions, that, at least for the musicians too.
Yeah,
to
I notice it,
and
I don't notice it because I'm working,
sure.
You know, but you would notice it more. Yeah, I guess it is happening. That's great, yeah. I think it seems like the country is trying to get back to more fun stages.
It's true. The harder things get on the outside, they're looking more for same diversions that they went for, in a way, back in the late 20s, early 30s. They're going back to the music again. Maybe if the big clubs close, it'll open up in cellars where there's more participation by everybody.
Yeah, we really need that. I think we're on a one-way street right now, and we really need that to happen. Jam sessions, it's community, it's sort of a community involvement with musicians instead of the push away. You know,
yeah.
I think people, things like this pull people together.
Yeah.
Ray Stevens came out with a new record, so I think it's hilarious. You know, I mean, it just that reminded me of, you know, a record like Ray, that Ray Stevens came out with about the Elks Convention is just very much needed in the 80s right now. And that what you were talking about just made me think of that. You know?
Boy, that's true. They used to have the rent parties, didn't they, where everybody came. And the people in the crowd were as much a part of the action as the musicians. There was a flow.
Oh, yeah, my uncle played those tenement houses, rent parties, and back in the 40s and 30s.
Right. And then it got more and more set in form. Pretty soon you had a concert situation rather than an interplay. And it sounds like we're going back now where the people, all of the people, are going to be part of it again.
I hope so. I really would like being like back to the 40s.
Yeah.
I would hope so. I think that we should be at a point now as a country, and I'm not running for election, that we've had a lot of beautiful styles and cars and music, and I think we should just take inventory and just collect all the goodies from the year 1850 or whatever back, and bring forth all the quality things up to 1980, cars, music, and everything. And let's pick out all the good, you know, let's not call them the good old days. Like, the good old days with the dentist wasn't the good old days. So let's keep the new dentist and go back and get the other things with the good old days, you know, and bring them forward. And keep all the good things from the year one of the bicentennial up to now, and discard the bad things. Like I saw a drill for a dentist, and it was a pump, you know, like the old sewing machines. Can you imagine in your tooth drill with that? And I think that we should keep all the good things about the good old days. Yeah. And I think that the thing about music is bringing back the good memories, you know, like, oh, let's bring this back, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the way I feel about that.
You know, it'd be fun. Again, talk about, now, this is going to sound funny, but talk about you as a sort of musical guru or teacher would be a better word. What you are, you know, you've been playing for years, you have a certain something in your playing. Wouldn't it be neat if, when you were here in town sometime, you could say, look, I'm going to be at X place on Saturday afternoon. I'm going to have a bass and a drum with me. Anybody that wants to come on over and play a few numbers with me can do so. And all these young musicians would come by, and they'd have that experience of flowing with you and making music and getting just a little bit of you imparted to them. And you
would too.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. Are you throwing an idea in my head?
No, I just sort of picked it off the wall. Right?
Yeah, sounds like a very good idea. I don't do a lot of jamming much at all because I work a lot. And I was fortunate or unfortunate to be picked up at a very early age by a major recording company and did not come up through any ranks as such. And that would be quite an experience for me to do that, something like that. I guess I had not thought about it because my work has been sort of demanding to the point that I do everything I can to prepare just to be there at night. And I do a lot of my own work other than playing the piano. But it sounds like a good idea. Maybe we can do it. Maybe we can plan on doing it the next time or something like that. I wouldn't be fair if I tried to get wishy-washy about whether I could do it before I left now.
Yeah, because
it just came in my mind. Right? Yeah, well, that's a good idea. That's a nice idea. I never think of the point that a lot of musicians would be interested in playing with me.
Oh, I think they would. I'm just sure they would. And I know from the way they responded to similar things like this out at a motel here where Kenneth Ware, who was on our campus a year ago, is excellent musician, very accomplished, was participating in jam sessions with young people, and they were just crawling in under there from every place, out of the high schools. Their music teacher from the school would be there with them.
The Purdue band, jazz band.
They would.
A couple years ago invited me a couple times to come over and play with their, you know, to their rehearsal, to sit in with them. And I didn't make it. I don't know exactly what came up. Every time I come to Lafayette, I either catch the flu or something. But I didn't make it over. I think I had the flu. I don't know. But they invited me a couple of times, which would have been exciting. I hear they have a good band.
They do.
They do.
Tell me something. Is there a model railroad set up down below?
There is over at Stewart Center here at Purdue.
Where's Stewart Center?
And that is across campus, not too far from this building.
Stewart Center.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there is a model railroad that the engineers have put together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just heard that last. I like model railroading. When you asked, I think you've asked me one time what my hobby was.
Yeah.
That's the hobby that I never get a chance to do.
All right.
Since I've been big. It's model railroading. I like to see that.
Yeah. Okay, and now we're finding out.
I was speaking of one of my best friends, Jim Hamilton, about it, and he says, there he is. he's a doctor over here at Purdue, and he didn't know that. You know.
Oh, yeah. So in the days ahead here, you're going to be doing more writing, apparently. Not on schedule, necessarily, but as it comes, you're going to be doing more playing and traveling. You have no more time out scheduled for a while, huh?
No, I'm very anxious to. I would like to afford a couple of months to be at home. That June time was really fascinating for me, and I like to afford some time to do that.
Yeah,
I would like to get into a lot of things. I mean, I feel like I'm filling up with things, and I want to spit them out. I really do.
Well, I know from the reaction of the crowd when I've seen you at this visit, which you are currently in the middle of here in Lafayette.
At Arnie's once again.
Yeah.
Arnie's
Market Square. People are still into it.
Through September 13th.
Indeed.
Yeah, we didn't mention that.
No, we didn't, because sometimes we play the tape on the 12th or something like that. But.
Right, okay.
We'll do better this time.
Do you think the turnout, the response has been good?
Yes. An example, there was a big band playing locally last night, of which I was a part, and it was doing a so-so job, playing these arrangements which were dog-eared, and they were old in 54 when I was in junior high. Right?
They were old in 54 when you were in junior high.
Yeah, and this guy has this book, and it's not that they're that bad, they're just dated. A girl came up from a sorority and says, boy, that's really good. We'd like to have you for a pledge dance. This is exciting. And I haven't heard anybody say that since 1954. In other words, people are excited about things that before they just sort of turn up their noses at.
Yeah, this is new to that things. After a while, you know, after the wheel turns, it's all new again. You know,
yeah.
Like Betty Carter says that she's been singing the song she sang so long that she's like her and Stan Getz. They jumped off one end, got back on the other end, and they're all new again.
And it's the all-new Roy Merriweather. You may go through changes and changes, but you're always going to be something that people want to hear. And with more and more people coming along, jumping on the back end of the bandwagon again, boy, you're going to have a bigger and bigger following as the days go on. No matter where you go musically.
Well, I like to say about my writing, I'm not trying to say any very big thing. I don't like to count my chickens before they hatch, but I like to, I am excited about writing. You know, I I probably can write from this book and for the rest of my life and not ever finish, you know. I said at one point that was going to be the last book things I was going to write. I mean, who, I might not finish it for 50 years, you know. But I'm really excited. I think it's very exciting stories. And, you know, you can come out and see for yourself, you know, for your own opinion as to how they sound. But I like them very much. I can feel what they're doing.
And I know folks are enjoying it very much because comments are just buzzing around where I go. People are glad you're here. People are excited about what they're hearing. So,
well, I'm so glad to be here. I don't even know what to say. I was looking forward to being on the program today to talk to you. And I know there's a million things that I wanted to say that I didn't get a chance to get into that I just cannot even think that I'll think about when I get going on my daily chores, you know. But there's just so much I wanted to say that I've said a lot, and but that's a lot I wanted to say. And I know there was, but I just can't put it all together right now.
But we know that you have a lot to say, and so that's why we ask you to come by every time you're here.
Indeed. Maybe if something really burning comes to you, why, give a call. We'll set up another session. I know our listeners love them because they call every time we play the interviews back.
They do.
Sure do.
I never known what the response was, except the one time when I was here and I was talking about a football incident. We were talking, and it was related to animation. And I said, people will always enjoy a good performance. I said, like in a football game. I said, people marvel at how a human being, gets from one end of the field to the other without getting tackled. I said, people will always appreciate how a guy can do that. And they will not appreciate an animated machine doing that because they'll know that it can be programmed to get to that goal and put the touchdown. You know? And a man came out that night, and it's the first time I've ever had anybody quote me and say, I heard you say we were in the restroom. I can tell you what we were doing, but we were in the restroom looking at each other face to face. Boy, I got to get out of this one. And he said to me, I really like, I'm out here because he was an older man. He had to be past 60 because of your interview. He said, I like what you said. And it was just one man, you know, but it was just really nice that somebody had heard that and quoted some of it and liked what I said. This was 3 years ago or so. We did the interview and you gave me a copy of it. A person, you did.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
And and I had to fly out to Phoenix after that. I can't remember which, I think it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hold you up. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
You're quotable. Always quotable, and we thank you. It's been fun.
And I look forward to sharing a lot of this with folks Saturday night.
Oh, okay. This is going to be on Saturday night.
Oh, yes.
I guess you're going to erase this part.
Our jazz-focused listeners, our daytime listeners.
Excuse me.
That's all right. Go ahead.
I heard some music on WBAA last Saturday night, and it was out of another city, right? I really enjoyed it, but man, was it out. It was so out, I couldn't believe it. But anyway, thanks very much. I'll tell you about that later.
Okay. Roy Merriweather, and aren't you curious what he talks about when the tape stops? The visits go on, he at Arnie's until the 13th of September, and us with he probably until the next time we meet. We hope the listeners enjoyed this as much as we have, and especially you, Roy. Thanks much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.